podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
How's it going, people? Welcome back to the channel and welcome back to the Forever Arsenal podcast. I don't hope everyone is good and well, because I'm sure everyone is good and well when it comes to Arsenal. A big, big victory in the North London Derby away at Tottenham. First one in 9 years, and it puts us 8 points clear. But there's a lot more to talk about than just that game. The Mudryk stuff as well. Obviously, a lot of deflated fans Saturday night after Chelsea swooped in and got him. But Arsenal sure made up for it on the Sunday. And I think Mudryk is a bit of history now. But we will get into that, because I was vexed myself with it. And we will talk about the transfer window.
I think he was himself.
He doesn't look too happy, does he?
I mean, he hasn't smiled in a single photo, but anyway, good luck to him.
Yeah, leading up to it, he was posting Arsenal literally every other day. And then now he's signed for Chelsea. We haven't seen him active at all. So I don't know what's going on there. But he is a Chelsea player. It is over. There is no Mudryk to Arsenal. There is no more Instagram, more flirting. There's no more twerking. It is what it is. We beat Tottenham away. That is the main news. Me and Lee were at the game. I haven't had a chance to catch up with Jordan and James, so we might as well start unusually with one of the ones that I haven't caught up with, because I was there with Lee. We did briefly speak about it, but I do want to get his thoughts and vice versa. I'll give mine. But let's go with... I don't want to... start with a negative. So let's go with James first.
That is harsh.
just in case, if I start with you, you might start with something else. You might
say, No. You'll see what I got. Go on, James.
Shall we address the allegations? Right. You've all seen my fan cam title, and you've all got a bit to say about it. So do you want to just get that off your chest?
Your fan cam title, I was always confident. And I thought to myself, I'm forever Arsenal. When I predicted 3-1, this was your reaction. Oh, no. And then I saw his title. I was always confident. What's going on there, James?
Did you watch the video, my friend?
No. Nah.
Wow.
I said, sod this guy. He's a liar.
That's what I call him, knocker. Knock, knock.
I still don't know what that means.
Not to be trusted. That's what that actually means. Knocker means not to be trusted.
Sure. Well, for all you lovely people, because I saw this coming, I even called out Lee Judges by name. I knew you'd all have something to say about the fact that I was confident. I said to Dan, this is all absolutely true. And by the way, it was Dan who said it in the interview, not even me. But I came in for the starting 11 show, and I had that 25-minute walk from Highbury and Islington. And I don't know how, I honestly can't explain it to you. This is all 100% true. My feeling on the game just completely flipped. Now, going into even Friday when I recorded the previews after Box to Box at the Ground with Cecil, even then I was going, I hate this fixture. I hate coming here. This is where I just accept we're not going to, at best we'll get a point, and maybe we get out of there without, you know, giving them the satisfaction of a win. And that morning, something, I was just like, let's have it. Come on. Let's. I don't know what it was. I was just feeling good about it. I talked to my brother as well. I said, I hate this feeling, Will, because it's the disappointment that kills you. But I actually think we can do something. And they absolutely delivered. I don't know if you guys ever get that feeling. I remember a couple of occasions over the years. I remember we beat Barcelona 2-1 at the Emirates. I remember that day as well, just thinking, I don't know, I think we might do something. And a very similar feeling that morning, which was so contrary to everything I've been feeling all week. And I went for a draw on Forever Arsenal, being optimistic. I actually thought we'd lose at the time. I thought, we'll probably lose because we always lose this game. But it was something, I think my head just started to overrule my, like, you know, my typical nerves. Well, stop shaking your head. This should be inspiring you, Lee. And all you're just being cynical about it. But I just felt like, hold on, they've been awful. We've been brilliant. And we haven't let the kind of, you know, the weight of pressure facing Liverpool or Chelsea get to us. We play brilliantly at Old Trafford. Why can't we? And in fairness, second half, they made us work for it a little bit. The first half, we were immense. And we just did what we've been doing to every team. And we got the win. And I'm so, so proud of the team.
Yeah, well, listen... Proud of the team is an understatement. If you saw my fan cam, I don't think I've ever had a fan cam like that. I'm not sure who saw it, but I don't think I've ever had a fan cam like that.
Well, I do watch the fan cams, Turkish, actually. I was interested in what you had to say.
No, when you're talking to the league, I expect people to be watching.
I hear your singing songs.
I was getting involved. I was getting involved. To say
which
the least.
Songs in particular were you enjoying?
Well, there's one about Super Mick Arteta. I was enjoying a little bit.
Have the lyrics changed on that, by the way? Has it become going to win the Premier League, surely? Is that?
I always sing that. I've always sung that. I think it's been a very... I love the song, but it's negative.
Yeah.
Listen, Arsenal sing, right? If someone said to me, yeah, you've got to be realistic. Arsenal's best song, right, when everybody sings it, is by far the greatest team the world has ever seen. Is that really true? Are we the best team the world's ever seen at this moment in time? No, but we sing it and we sing it proud. So when we sing at the end of that, when they sing, I always say, and Arsenal going to win the Premier League. That is what I say, like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm on my own at the moment, but listen, I've been singing that for a year. I don't think we should be like saying, oh, we're celebrating getting to the top four, you know, but aim higher. And I'm a big thing of that, like, you know.
Yeah, a bit of
just thought I say that, sorry.
A bit of Granite Jack in there as well.
A little bit.
We've
got Granite
Jack. Yeah. Who have we got, Jordan?
He who can't be named.
That's the one.
Much more it's got to be named now, Jordan, after that performance in the North London.
I'm getting there. No, I'm not going to lie. We'll get to the United game because that if we can get past United on Saturday,
it's always the next one for granted.
No, that is the one.
I can't wait for Jordan's live coverage when Arsenal touch wood lift the trophy and he's just there on the radio going, and up he comes, he who can't be named, and he's lifting the trophy, one hand on the left, Odegaard on the other.
I know it's not realistic.
Lifted it. What a change. What a turnaround.
I know it's never really, it's not realistic. It ain't going to happen. But if he was at to win the shirt, you know, you'd have to have Granit Xhaka on the back. With the paper.
Yeah, it makes sense. I think it makes sense.
It's coming.
There was a bit of Eddie. And don't get me wrong. When I was there watching the game, I thought Eddie had a poor game. Because he had a couple missed chances at crucial times. You know, I thought it could have been 3-4-0. But then when I came home the next day, well, the evening, going into the morning, and I watched the game back, the full game back, I thought, nah, he actually had a pretty good game when I look at it overall. It's very different watching it live to watching it on TV. So I saw things that he did and the way he helped the team leading the attack, and especially in that second half. And I thought to myself, okay, It was justified, a bit of Eddie in there as well. So, yeah, I enjoyed myself. Second away game this season, no goals conceded. The other one was Brentford 3-0, Tottenham 2-0. I'm on a roll. I'm at Emirates next week as well.
Were you singing we've got Stanley Kroenke or anything like that?
Don't ruin it.
When you start singing about him, I'll start singing about the Swiss captain, yeah? Deal.
At least I'm the Swiss captain now. They've got Stanley. And with the Mudryk news and the lack of incoming so far in January, they've got a longer way to go than I first thought in December. But we'll talk about that. Let's talk about Tottenham first and foremost. What a result! What a performance! Finally got the job done under pressure as well. Because after United beat City, yes, it was good for us, but at the same time, United are now in the conversation too. We're only 18 games in. We're not even halfway there yet. Jordan's shaking his head, but I know why, but they have put themselves in the conversation with the form that I don't think they'll do it. I don't think they'll be near it at the end, but I didn't think Arsenal would do it. I didn't think we'd be near it at the end, and we're not near it. We're leading it. So we'll see how that one goes. Let's go to Jordan now. Jordan, let's start with the positives first. Don't bring it down.
Turkish, I've only got positives today, honestly. Today, I can't find a negative. I think James used the word proud earlier on. I think that is the word. I'm just proud of this team, watching this team play and how they go about their business. It's just a joy to watch. One of the biggest signs for me that other rival fans are genuinely scared about what Arsenal are doing is I hear some of the dumbest and stupidest arguments against why Arsenal win the Premier League. Oh, you guys over celebrated. Oh, if you guys get an injury to him, like eight players in name. Oh, it's a weak league this season. Just really, really kind of the dumb reasons. They're clutching. They're clutching for reasons as to why Arsenal can't in the Premier League. I said to my dad, who's a Chelsea fan, and my cousin, who's a Man United fan, if you don't think Arsenal win the Premier League, that's fine. That's a legitimate opinion. You can pick City, you know, whatever. That's fine. But their reasons behind it are so weak. I'm like, just say, I hate Arsenal. I think it would be the worst thing in the world for you guys to win the Premier League. I will hate it. But you guys are a problem and I'm scared. Just say that. Just say that. Just be honest. And that's telling me that they are all genuinely concerned that we could win the Premier League. Because their arguments are so weak. They're so weak, Turkish. Watching the Spurs-Arsenal game, I'm just so happy about how easy we're dismissing these teams. We're not making a big deal of it. We're not making a big fuss of it. We're just going to teams now and just handling our business, doing the job, getting in and getting out. Another thing as well that I was pleased about as well was we won 2-0. But, and I'm going to be honest, I was at a friend's 50th. So I missed this one. I did miss it. I saw the highlights on Match of the Day and I watched all the clips online. But
are you serious?
I had a friend's 50th and I forgot about it until the day before. But I'm going to the Emirates. I'm going to the Emirates. I'm actually going to the Emirates on Sunday, so I can't miss this one. Lee's turned his camera off and James just left.
Two of us now, Jordan. Well done. Well done.
It's just me in Turkish.
If he's missed the game, I'm missing his thought.
Exactly. I'm not listening to anything he's got to say now. Like, you know, this
you know what it was? You know what it was? The day before, a friend reminded me it was her 50th party and she booked it like 3 months ago. I was at the event with my phone, just seeing Larissa and Goldgrave. Anyway, I'm going to keep talking because I know it's poor. I deserve this. I deserve to be... Turkish, you should leave too. I deserve it. I deserve it.
But where my studio is right now, it's a tight space because I wanted to leave.
I'll save my piece and then I'll leave.
Even better. Just go leave the camera. Leave that behind you.
I'll save my bit, then I'll go. But what I was going to say was the fact that we not only beat Spurs at Spurs in of itself is a great thing because we don't generally win there. But we beat them playing good football. It wasn't a back to the wall smash and grab. I think Spurs got lucky to only lose 2-0. I think we were so much better than Spurs. I just love how we're comfortable in games. Yeah, Spurs had a 10-15-minute period in the second half. Don't stop looking your head, Lee.
He knows what's going to come in the comment section.
I know. But I'm, you know, if anything, I'm not a liar. I'm an honest guy.
Sharoy,
you can call me.
You might be in, mate. I'll be honest with you. This might be one step too far.
I'm thinking maybe a Tottenham fan would be better coming on. Like that.
Honestly, I was gutted, but I did watch the game afterwards. I did watch it afterwards. I didn't watch it live. But let me say my final point, then I'll get my coat. I just love how
Taxi.
The Uber's coming in a minute now. I love how we're handling our business with the minimal amount of fuss. We just look so comfortable. Apart from a 10-minute spell in the second half, at no point did I think we were in trouble. And I think that's testament to how we're playing. We're not fluking these wins. We're not getting these wins by our backs to the wall. I love that. And just before I go, I want to just very briefly flag three individuals. The first one, you mentioned Eddie Nketiah there, Turkish. He didn't score a goal. And I mentioned that he scored a goal against West Ham that was very Ian Wright-like. His general play is very Ian Wright-like. There was a run that he did where he bent it. I forgot who put him through, and he bent it. And it just reminded me, almost said his name then. He shan't be named, pass him through. And the whole movement just reminded me of really of prime Ian Wright. The second guy I want to mention, and I keep mentioning him every single week now, but he just gets better and better for me. Thomas Partey, Tommy P. He's really, really, really becoming the guy that I really thought we'd sign. He was immense. He was so immense. He is bossing that midfield. He's really, really impressing me. And the third person I want to name, who I said on the last podcast I thought was an important figure in this game was the manager, Mikel Arteta. I thought the team was right, the tactics were right, the in-game management was correct, the subs were correct, and he conducted himself in a really calm way. I think you mentioned, James, in the last podcast, we don't need to get involved in the emotion of this game. I want to just see him, as you mentioned, James, hands in your pockets, just handle business, knowing that you trust your team to get the job done. So I think Mikel Arteta deserves a real big round of applause as well, because if you look at how we performed there last year, and how, what had, okay, I know Rob Holding got sent off, but how we were there last year, it was the opposite. We got involved in the emotional battle, whereas this time it was just, we're better than you, motherfuckers. We're better than you. We don't need to get involved in your little boy games. We're going to handle business, get our 3 points, and get the hell out of it, because we've got bigger things to worry about. I'll go now.
And actually, sorry to add, just very quickly to add to that, I think the way it's gone. It's amazing how we got all that from the highlights.
On his phone as well. Brilliant. Yeah, you know what I mean, absolutely brilliant.
No, but he's spot on. And actually, the thing I really loved about it was, I think the way we approached it totally demoralised Tottenham and the stadium. I mean, you two were there, but it felt to me, because I was still listening to commentary on the side, it felt to me like when Arsenal got their foot on the ball, cool, they got an early goal. Let's be honest, Lloris really gave us that. We had a massive opportunity with Eddie before, so we were well worthy of our lead. But the way Arsenal were playing it around, and then when there were a few little moments where maybe it might have boiled over and the tension started to rise, Arsenal dealt with it brilliantly. And I think the fact that it was not interested, ball on the floor, pass, then they miss a few early chances, we kind of steal up a little bit, we kind of get through that bit. I think all that just completely killed Tottenham's kind of any confidence that they might have had, any sort of anything that they were hoping would generate a bit of momentum in the game. Arsenal went, yeah, we're not interested. We did the same at Stamford Bridge. We did the same at Stamford Bridge. We absolutely just quietened the crowd by essentially almost like, my housemate actually just moved out, bless him, but he was a Chelsea fan, probably because Arsenal playing so well. I remember him saying after that game, he said, you know, I was just watching it going, oh my word, you are so good. You know, and when you do that to a crowd, that's different to, you know, trying to get behind your team, hoping they find something, and you're going, they're too good, we can't do it. It's been a long time since Arsenal have gone to grounds and done that.
Yeah, especially that ground. I mean, on the names Jordan mentioned, I've talked about Eddie already and rewatching the game and seeing what he did bring, albeit the missed chances at the stadium. You just want those missed chances to hit the back of the net because the nerves are just flowing through your body. But Thomas Partey, even a few sloppy balls here and there, even just before the ball over the top to Saka, he gave possession away, but he pretty much won it back straight away. But then the ball over the top to Saka, Lloris just, Lloris failing to hold that, as Toby likes to say on the Big Six. And it was 1-0 Arsenal on goal. Go on, Jordan.
Can I just say very quickly, I'm talking way too much, and I know Lee wants to come in as well. I just want to say, you know, Turks, I love it. I told you so. People are talking now about Lloris being crap for the last 2 or 3 years. I know it's an Arsenal podcast, but I've got to say it. People said, oh, that he's declined the last 2 or 3 years. Let me tell you now, guys, I've done Arsenal podcasts on AFTV and for other platforms for nearly a decade. And I've been saying for almost a decade, Hugo Lloris is not elite. I'm talking when people had him in the category of Chelsea and Joe Hart at Man City. I've never had Hugo Lloris as an elite goalkeeper. He has always thrown one in, especially in the North London derbies as well. The amount of goals we've scored in North London derbies because of Hugo Lloris, he's never been an elite goalkeeper. This idea that he's just in the last 2 years declined is a myth. He can make a world-class save in 1 minute and chuck one in 4 minutes later. That is not a world-class goalkeeper. That is not a top goalkeeper. Top goalkeepers now are judged on how many mistakes you make over a season. And the best ones make one or two, max. He's making one a month.
He's always made one.
So I know this is the Arsenal podcast,
I'm glad you said that. Reason being, because there's a name you didn't mention, and you also said that Arsenal didn't look worried at all. And I'll just counter that, because Ramsdale made some crucial saves at some crucial times.
Man of the match. Yeah.
As soon as we went 1-0 up, they had a massive chance with Son, and it was a great save in that first half. At the end of the first half, the Harry Kane header, that was their only two chances in the first half, and there were two very good chances. The first one being more or less a dead cert hit in the back of the net, and he made the save with a Harry Kane header. And then to start the second half, we was 2-0 up. Tottenham had a bit of momentum starting the second half, trying to get back into it. He had the save from Harry Kane. And then probably the best one of the lot, Sessegnon, having just run through the save with his foot.
That's world class. That save is world class.
Because at those times, 1-0 up, it goes 1-1. In the second half, 2-0 up, an early goal for Tottenham, 2-1. Then you start hearing the stadium kind of really roaring and getting behind the team because, like you said, you're right, we nullified any noise from the stadium pretty much from the get-go. The Tottenham fans were watching it thinking... These are a proper team. But if they did get a goal in that second half, in the first 5-10 minutes, I believe it would have been a different game. And we know that Tottenham are used to comebacks this season. So Ramsdale, for me, man of the match by far. That's not to say we was under pressure. It's just to say that when called upon...
Do your job.
Lee's shaking his head. Not man of the match for you, Odegaard?
No way, man of the match. Like, I've got a confession to make. I went into the game, like, but I watched Coronation Street on my phone, you know.
So what was the highlights of Corrie then, Lee?
Yeah, it was very good, like, you know what I mean? Very good, like, you know what I mean? But seriously, like, bugs me when people say man of the match because it means in the goal, we've been under the pump and all that, like, and we wasn't. We wasn't under the pump. What he'd done is he made a very, very good save from Sessegnon, on which he was brilliant. I've got to say that I thought Ramsdale was fantastic on the day. He'd done what I expect a very, very good goalkeeper to do, make saves when it mattered. And what was good about his performance was I didn't think he was busy. We've criticised him at times for trying to get involved in the game. Mm-hmm. He let the game come to him, made his saves, done everything properly. And do you know what? What are people saying? Oh, he's man of the match. Because he's done his job properly. And that's what I like and that's what I want from my goalkeeper. And I think now it's time for him now to take over at number one and everything. That was as mature as goalkeeping performance that I've seen from him all season. And Turkish is right. The first save against Song, that's the one. Because it was 2 minutes or 3 minutes after we'd scored. Yeah. Game changer. Fantastic. But man of the match, no. When I look at performances like Thomas Partey, Ødegaard on there, Saka, what he done and all that, like Ben White at the back. The two central defenders were fantastic. They were better than Ramsdale. Ramsdale done his job. I love him. And one of the best things at the end of the game, Turkish, as you will know, is that his dad was up in the stands serenading the Arsenal fans to Aaron Ramsdale. It is fantastic. You know what I mean? Like, first, the second thing I'm going to say about over-celebrating, I don't care. That was fantastic. If any Arsenal fan... You know, I used to moan and groan on interviews when players didn't come over and all that. And people used to say to me, it ain't the end. Well, it's not that big a deal. Every single player, substitute, coach, everybody that was involved on that. I think I even see the team, the bus driver on their giving. You know what I mean? It's fantastic. Every single one of them people that was to do with Arsenal was over there. And as I said, I say it yesterday and I say it today. I don't know how Turkish feels about that. I feel I contributed to Arsenal winning the game of football against Tottenham because I felt part of it. And that is the biggest thing that Mikel Arteta has done for me.
He just pointed at himself, Jordan.
Yeah.
Man of the
even
match,
if you was on your phone, you know what I mean?
Like, me
even,
too, Lee. Me too.
Yeah, I mean, you're on the dance floor giving it. I know, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know. I'll tell you what, the Arsenal players, this is, as I was running over, they said, let's dance on the White Hart Lane turf because, like, you know, I mean, Jordan's partying it, his mate's 50, giving it, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? But no, seriously, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And I do believe that was part of it. I felt something, you know, like, it was just fantastic. Like, the performance was brilliant. I'm going to be like, I know what James is saying earlier on about I'm always worried about North London derbies. I'm going to be like, I went to bed at 11 o'clock. At 1 o'clock, I'm still up, like, you know what I mean? Like, waggling away I was at 1 o'clock in the morning, like, you know what I mean? Like, I couldn't get to sleep.
Pick your words wisely, Lee. Wanging or waggling?
Wanging away I was. Wanging away at 1 o'clock in the morning, like, couldn't get to sleep. Get to the game, nervous as anything, you know, like, you know, 15 minutes into that game. Now, this is a big boat, but you know, I turned around to Julian because I was standing next to Julian and I said to him, we are winning this game. 15 minutes into that game, we was winning that game. And I was disappointed that we wasn't more than 1-0 up, is what Jordan said. 2-0 up at half-time. I felt we should have been 3 or 4. But what was really good about it, guys, is that, you know, when they say, oh, Spurs don't start, the first 5 minutes, they come out. They play well. Do you know why they went back into their shape and shell? Because we made them by the way we play. We got on the ball and we knocked it back and around them and we scared them. We scared them back into their shape. And when I got my Spurs mates phoning me up after the game and going, wow, you know what I mean? Like, one of them turned around to me and said, like, at half time, I'd have bit your hand off for 2-0. I was pleased to get out of that game 2-0.
Sorry, I just want to step in there because there's another thing I want to mention about Ramsdale. Now you've said that, you know, in the first 5-10 minutes of the second half, it wasn't a save, but we was under pressure and Ramsdale grabbed the ball and he held on to it. But then he realised there's a chance. He got straight back up and he played a long ball.
Martinelli,
who got fouled by Sarr, who got a yellow card. And then that slowly but surely added to changing things around in that second half. Because usually you want your keeper to sit on it, waste a bit of time because we are under a little bit of pressure in
Fantastic
the game.
Fantastic point. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. You know what you just said there, Lee, about that first 5 minutes, Tottenham started all right and then they started to back off because we made them. I honestly think you can maybe look at one pass that completely changed that. Do you remember when Zinchenko, you'd have had a good view of it. Zinchenko had it at left back. He had a player in front of him and a player sort of to his right. I think it was Sarr. And he came inside and you think he's going to give it back to Gabriel. And with his right foot, he cuts it through. And then Xhaka turns and he's running. And that was right in the middle of the pitch. But our ability to just play through their midfield, you know, because we had Zinchenko, Partey, Odegaard and Xhaka, basically as a forward, just totally dominating Højbjerg and Sarr. And the defenders didn't really want to come. And every time Romero did, he made an absolute clown of himself because he was awful. Flew into every tackle, whether he was near it or not.
I don't write him now.
Awful, I know, neither do I. Clearly, yeah, anyway. I think that was the moment that they went, oh, we just tried to press a little bit, but they dealt with it like it was nothing. And then slowly retreated. And those little moments, that's why Zinchenko is so important.
He was super. Do you know what? I'm going to be really. We were talking about this, Serge. Like, you can go on. 5 years ago, I think I got very, very frustrated with Arsenal. I wasn't in love with Arsenal Football Club. I loved the football club, but I wasn't interested. So when they lost, I was taking it out on everybody. I didn't really like the players. Didn't want to, like, you know, every single player now I love in that football team. And Zinchenko, I'm not one of my favourites because he don't just come here, like, you know what I mean? He come out for the game and as he's about to kick off, he's come up to all the Arsenal fans going, come on, let's give it another. Oh, you know what I mean? I'm thinking, wow, all right, okay, you know, calm down a little bit, like, you know what I mean? The first time he got the ball, he put his foot on it and just showed you what he can do and he passed through the line. And I'll tell you what, I hate Tottenham. I hate that Højbjerg. But I a lot of admiration for him during that game because he was like running around all over the place. It was like run around now, like, you know what I mean? Every time he got near a player, they popped it off. Every time he tried he just couldn't get near Arsenal. But to his credit, he kept on working. We just, you know what I mean? Like, to play in that midfield against that three would have been an absolute nightmare for him. Like, you know what I mean? You know, he had a young kid next to him who ran his socks off as well. But we just played around them so, so easily. Like, it was a masterclass. And Odegaard, by the way, oh, my God. Like, you know what I mean? He was just purring. It was just a wonderful, wonderful first half performance. And I'm going to be really honest with you when I say this. I've not seen us play like that even when the Invincibles played and dominated a game like that, where we've had total control of a game of football. I'm sitting there at this magnificent stadium, 60,000, like, you know what I mean? I could have got my pipe and slippers out. Like, it was that good. I you know, and people go on, yeah, I've heard this thing now about the weakest league and all that, like, you know. Well, the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years, Arsenal Football Club have not been in this league, you know what I mean? And we are playing some breathtaking football, clean sheets, defending like we're defending. Do you know what? Years ago, we go 1-0, 2-0 up, and you couldn't relax and enjoy yourself. This is like watching Jordan Graham's defence, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's got this team's got a little bit of George Graham, right? Team, and it's got a little bit of Arsene Wenger. It's got a lovely mix.
You've
got proper players in there that want to defend. Now, Gabriel's took a little bit of stick in that. He made one mistake when he didn't win the header with Harry Kane. Other than that, he was immense. He was absolutely immense.
Lee, somebody in the comments mentioned, I was going to mention it now, because I'm glad you flagged it. Somebody in the comments, and I think on the last pod we did, mentioned Gabriel. We should talk about him a bit more. We spoke at length on the last pod about Onene. We've spoken at length about the likes of He Who Shan't Be Named, Saka, Jesus, Saliba, and now Ramsdale. We've not actually spoken, and even Ben White, we've not actually spoken this season on this podcast about Gabriel. And I think it's because in the first half of the season, he did make a couple of errors that made us a little bit, he needs to wipe it out. And he has. Since those two or three errors in the first 5-10 games, he's not put a foot wrong. He's arguably been better than Saliba.
Since those mistakes,
do you know what I mean? So I think we should just very briefly just mention Gabriel's performance in this game and his last 10 games, because he's been flawless. I don't think his ceiling is as high as Saliba's. I think Saliba's ceiling is higher. He'll go on to be a better player. But Gabriel is becoming a very solid, dependable defender. And that's what I want from my centre-back. I don't really care if you're not great on the ball or if you're not flashy. If you're just give me a 7 out of 10 every single week. He's not bad. So I think it's cool that we mentioned Gabriel. Second thing, I would write for a couple of things. You mentioned the celebrations, Lee. I don't think they did over-celebrate. I think it's a big win, and they celebrated a little bit. I don't think they over-celebrated. I didn't look at it and think, oh, God, all right, guys. Cut rain it in a little bit. There were no flags. There was no fireworks. There was no... Do you know what I mean? They danced with the fans for 10 minutes. Then they went back in. So I think that was overblown as well. The third thing, clean sheet. To get a clean sheet against Harry Kane and that Spurs front line, I know they're dog, but to keep a clean sheet, again, I think plays to your point, Lee, about this team defensively, especially away. James, you might know, but how many clean sheets away from home is that now? We've been so impressive.
Seven. Eight. Something like
and that. And that includes Tottenham and Chelsea. Do you know what I mean? So I think that the fact that we've got a clean sheet is one of the biggest things I took away from this particular fixture as well. And the final point I wanted to make, you guys were there, Turkish and Lena Stadium, and people talk about Spurs, the North London, this raucous atmosphere. Yeah. I watched it on TV, granted. I didn't see that. It looked and sounded loud. It sounded loud. It was loud, but don't give me this raucous atmosphere that I just don't see it. Go on, Lee. You wanted to respond.
No, I will say this. They're going on about how fantastic this atmosphere in this stadium is and everything like that. Like, you know what I mean? Let me tell you this now, not biased. The best atmosphere I've gone to a football ground is White Hart Lane, the old ground. 30,000, 35,000. It was electric. It was always rocking. It was unbelievable. I have to say, you know what I mean? I was always a little bit jealous of their atmosphere, how they got it and all that. They got it against us. Maybe it was different at other games. But when I went to Tottenham away, it was hostile. The atmosphere was electric. You know what I mean? I remember when... Do you remember that goal when Harry Kane scored and he threw off his mask? They went to the world. He actually scored with Sanchez. The place... It was moving. It was shaking. It was incredible. Like then Sanchez scored in the last minute, and Arsenal fans went mad. It was unbelievable. That atmosphere is nothing to what they've got now, and they can go on about, like, you know what I mean. Listen, it's a wonderful, wonderful stadium. I've got to say that, like. But as far as atmosphere is concerned, nowhere near like the old ground.
Again, they played two in the middle. I can't get over it. They never learn their lessons. Two in the middle, and they just got dominated again. In fact, we had four. If you include Zinchenko, we actually had four in midfield. So they just we killed them, and Conte didn't spot it. And my final point before I shut the hell up was going to be, I've forgotten.
While you think about that, you mentioned Gabriel, and we mentioned his performance, but Look at the way he was first over to Ramsdale at the end when Richarlison was kind of having a go at Ramsdale. Mm-hmm. He was the first one over. And one thing I loved about it, and this is coming from me, and usually in those situations, I grew up on hard-fought battles where...
You were down for the smoke.
If a player comes to you like Richarlison came to you, smack him or do something to him. But with this, with the way the league is set up now, with the way the FA is, with the way we get charged for pretty much nothing, I looked at Ramsdale and I thought to myself, that's Mikel Arteta. He's told you don't get involved in any of the nonsense because Richarlison was quite heavy-handed with him at the end.
He should be done for it. You know what I mean? Raising your hands. 100%. I will say this about Richarlison.
FA will do nothing.
No, they won't do nothing. I will say this about Richarlison. I can't stand him, right? But part of me, I agree with him. I don't know what the hell Martinelli's doing trying to fist pump him and things like that. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
did you think Martinelli was genuine, or do you think that was a little bit of...
I don't know, but maybe a little bit of it and all that. But
I think he was trying to...
I've got no problem with Richarlison not doing it, because if that was me, I'd done exactly the same. Like, I'll tell you what, when I play football, for that 90 minutes, if I'm playing it, I ain't friends with no one, you know what I mean? Like, apart from my teammates, that's it. So, I quite like that about Richarlison, I quite like that sort of thing, but I think it was a little bit of tongue in cheek and all that. Like, I like the thing with him and Tomiyasu having a little bit on the line and all that, like,
yeah.
There's a difference about this Arsenal team. I'm telling you this now. Arsenal ain't going to be bullied no more. That's what I like.
Yeah. And Lee, you mentioned the word earlier on, mature. The reaction from Tomiyasu in that instance was he was just mature. He didn't get involved. He was just, look, mate, just relax. He didn't rise to it. Ramsdale at the end with the fan and all that sort of stuff. It's mature. And I agree with Turkish. I think that comes from Mikel Arteta. I think he said to them, guys, last year you got involved, you got emotional. Yeah. They dragged you down to their level. This year we are on three different levels. Yeah, we don't need to be anywhere. We don't need to get involved. Just do your job. Don't rise to it, and let's get the hell out of this shithole.
Did you see when Granit Xhaka kind of ran towards the crowd again, or ran towards the players, and Arteta just turned around and ran?
Yeah,
that was. I mean, some of the memes that have come out of this derby as well. Like, we're just unbelievable. But, you know, just one thing I wanted to say as well, because, I mean, obviously, it's right that we look back at the last derby and what happened in May, and there's a lot of comparisons. And I think the mental side of things, we've obviously praised the way we dealt with this very differently. But I remember going into that derby in May saying, listen, they love the counter-attack. Don't go punch for punch. You know, they'll just hit you on the break and all that. I don't know if you guys sort of noticed, but the game plan was exactly the same as it was in May. The difference was, instead of Cedric and Holding, it was White and Saliba. There was a moment where Saliba followed Son all the way to the attacking third. That by the time Son passed the ball on and they were sort of getting back in some kind of shape, Saliba was on the right wing. Like, it was all man for man. And it was Arteta going, Gabriel, I trust you on Kulusevski. Saliba, I trust you on Kane. But when White has to come all the way across to press Sessegnon, then it's going to be you, Saliba, that drops onto Son. And you're just going to have to figure it out. But I trust you all. And they did it. They absolutely did it. And Arsenal did have to, I think it might have been Grizz on Big Six last night who made this point. Arsenal did have to suffer at times. Fantastic show. Did have to suffer at times in that second half. Like, they did. Let's be fair. Tottenham did have probably three really good chances. The Son one. I don't think the Kane header is a massive chance. I think he actually does really well with the cross.
Yeah.
The Sessegnon one, and maybe one of the Kulusevski shots. So they had a couple. But, you know, that's fine. No one's expecting you to go to Tottenham and not concede any chances. But it's more that they weathered that first 10 minutes of the second half and still looked incredibly composed. It didn't look like it rattled Arsenal. Like, oh, they've come out here. They kind of went, oh, that was a bit tricky. Well done, Aaron. Thank you for saving us. Let's get on the ball again. And so Arsenal in the first half showed everything on the ball. And then in the second half, I think mentally were just
showed a different side.
Unreal.
Showed a different side. Yeah. I'll be honest, James. You know what I mean? I'll be really...
I wasted 2 hours sleep. I said it on my fan cam, wasted 2 hours sleep. I shouldn't have done, because this team has got this sort of, I've got to start believing a little bit more in this team, because it's not just about that first half and how magnificent it was. It is that second half defending.
It's more important.
And defend and do the dirty stuff. This team is prepared to do the dirty work. It's prepared to defend. It's like turning around and I don't know if they've gone in at half-time and said, right, we've done our job. The attacking boys, we've done our job. Two goals at White Hart Lane. Yeah. Over to you boys now to go and do it. And they've all gone, right, yeah, this is it. Right, this is my time. I'm not watching defenders lose out to Agüero's in headers and things like that. Do you imagine one of these centre-halves losing an header against Agüero in a cup final? That ain't happening. It's not happening, you know what I mean? Like, right, this is your time now. Harry Kane, you know what I mean, scored one goal against this season for a penalty. He hasn't got nothing from open play, you know. He's actually been like, he's a good player, Harry Kane. He had a couple of chances in that game. Other than that, he never got a kick. He never got a kick, and he's a good player, because we got players that are proper defenders now. I'll tell you, if you spoke to Harry Kane, he'd sit there and he'd go, I wouldn't want to play against them two week in, week out. And that's what we've got now. We've had good central defenders in the past, boys. We've had, like, you know, one. We've got two now. When have we had two good central defenders like this? Yeah. Since the Invincible, since we won the league with Adams and Keown, Bold and Adams, I can go back, like, you know what I mean? We've now got a central defensive partnership as good as anybody in the league. And I said it on another show yesterday, like, I wouldn't swap them two for anybody else. If you said, right, you can have Van Dijk, right? Fantastic central defender. I'm not saying he is, but I'm not swapping him with Saliba, and I'm not swapping anybody with them two central defenders. They're my guys, and I'll tell you what, that 21 and 24.
Well, just on that, Lee, that's all three of you. I know we've got to move on to other things, but lots to talk about. But is there a part of the pitch on our starting 11 where we could upgrade? So is there a position in the pitch where you think
no?
So honestly, left back, we've got the best left back in the country at the moment.
The answer is yes, but they're all purring and they're all playing so well that whoever we signed isn't walking into this team. I mean, look, Ilkay Gundogan is still a better box-to-box player than Granit Xhaka.
Yeah.
But he's not playing like it right now. Nketiah is not the best striker in the league, but my word, is he more than doing his bit? Ben White is currently the best right back in the league, but
is
he going to be reflected on as that over Trent and Cancelo over the next 3-4 years? Probably not. Maybe. I mean, maybe he will. I mean, he's playing that well. And he's a different style. You know, he can overlap, but he's also, his defensive work's unreal.
Wouldn't swap him with no one at the minute, James.
Sorry?
I wouldn't swap him with no one at the moment.
No, but I wouldn't swap any of them. I mean, I wouldn't swap any of our players right now for anyone. Of course not.
Trippier, right back.
Right, no. I mean, another top player, but
You know what I mean. Go back to your 50th party, will you? Like, you know what I mean,
I'm just being provocative. You know what I mean? Just, you know,
I get your point.
It's getting
too lovey-lovey.
You know what? We said on a debate show the other day, James, and it's a fantastic point. Yes, Harry Kane's probably better than Jesus, but I would not swap Jesus for Harry Kane. Because of the way we play and the team and all that, like, you know.
I agree with that.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I wouldn't swap none of these players at the moment. Like, you know what I mean? They're all.
We said that before the derby, by the way.
Yes, we certainly did.
A bit of courage, that we, you know.
But no,
just asking.
You know, De Bruyne's a fantastic player, but I wouldn't swap him with Odegaard at this moment in time. You know what I mean? Like, don't forget all these players as well. We're all younger than all the guys that you're mentioning. You know what I mean? Like, in 3 or 4 years' time, where's De Bruyne going to be? In 3 or 4 years' time, where's Van Dijk going to be? You know what I mean? Like, I'll tell you what, you know, you look at Gabriel, I think it's a little bit of criticism because Saliba's so much more, like, you know, better on the ball and everything like that. It just highlights a little bit of his little weaknesses and all that. Like, but I'm telling you that now, I wouldn't swap them two for no one. I wouldn't swap them for no one, like, you know.
They've been part of reconnecting the fan base with the club.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Ramsdale, like, in goal, you know what I mean? Listen, if there was a weakness in this team, I would probably say it was him, right? And I don't mean this nastily. And I say when I say this is because there is at times he tries to get involved in the game and, like, make a cock up and whatever. And you think, oh, well, you know, That performance from him on, it tells me that he's maturing. He's becoming, you know, he is going to be a wonderful, wonderful goalkeeper if he keeps his head on, like, you know what I mean? Yeah, I wouldn't swap none of them, like, you know what I mean? Yes, there's better players out there, but...
I know we've really talked about this performance and it deserves it, by the way. It absolutely deserves a longer show and all the time. I just wanted to have one last point that on the many shows I do, I haven't got out till 44 minutes into this one. Over the years, Man City, you know, I remember when they first won the title under Pep, they went and won at the Bridge. Last season, they won 2-0 at Old Trafford. If you look at some of the wins they've had away from home in these kind of bigger games, they've not always kind of played scintillating kind of tick-attack of football and sort of tapped it into the back of the net. It's sometimes taken, like, at the Bridge, De Bruyne from distance to just with his left foot, you know, find on the back of the net. Or I remember they beat Man City last year. I think it was a De Gea error. And then it was a deflection off a cross, you know, from Foden that went into the back of the net and they won 2-0. There is such thing as almost playing well, not because you're creating chances, but because you're exerting so much pressure on the opposition that you're just forcing things. You're forcing errors from the goalkeeper. You're forcing bad deflections or you're forcing panic in their back line. And that's something Man City have done really well over the years. And it's always been reflected on as, oh, look at Pep and City. Look at the way they went and dominated there. Look how they battered this team. And actually, when you look at it, if it weren't for that De Bruyne strike, they might not have won that game. If it weren't for that deflection, they might not have won that game. Now, you could say that about Arsenal a little bit, but Odegaard's goal, well, 5 minutes or 10 minutes before, he had a strike from distance and forced a big save out of Lloris there. It's all by design. You know, Partey rattled the post and we scored a goal from distance.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that. Yeah.
Oh, what a
yeah. Oh, wow. That goes in.
But look at the goal in the
best goal in the North London derby ever.
Yeah, these strikes from distance, they're absolutely part of the plan. Well, they're going to drop deep. They want to ensure that we don't get in and around their penalty area, so let's strike it early. You know, all these things are all part of our, you know, Saka. How many times does it don't show him onto his left foot and he goes onto his right foot and still causes problems? You know, these are... I think someone with a very cynical mindset might look at that game and go, sure, but if it weren't for those moments, you know, would Arsenal have won? But if you just put pressure on the opposition, you force these errors. And I want to make sure that we don't take anything from Arsenal in that situation.
Yeah, 100%. I get you. It makes sense. But you are right, 47 minutes in and there's still some more to talk about. I'm going to move you on to the transfer stuff before Arsenal, because like I said, on Saturday night especially, I'd done a video. I was vexed because I just thought it's a bit of the same old. We've talked about on the pitch. You know my thoughts on Mikel Arteta now and how he's changed it around over the last 24 months. It's time for the ownership and the boardroom to change it around off the pitch too. And I just felt like we've been chasing this guy, talking to this guy since November, maybe even from the summer. He wants us. He's been doing interviews from November. There was a World Cup break where he wasn't involved. There was a whole 6 to 7 weeks that passed from the first bit of interest, the first interview with Zinchenko's wife on YouTube, and we made no bid. You know, I'm not asking the club to match what Chelsea were offering in terms of wages, because what I've read, no, you don't do that when you're still to renew Saka, still to renew Martinelli, still to renew Saliba. You look at what Mudrik's done. Nothing so far. A handful of games in the Ukrainian league. You can't give him that money at Arsenal Football Club, because we haven't got Chelsea, Man City, Man United money, and we're just coming off the back of resetting our wage structure. So I'm with the club. I understand that, but I just feel like we could have got the deal done before Chelsea even came sniffing around. Now, like I said, after the Tottenham game, it's history for me. I forgot about it, but we've got 2 weeks or just under 2 weeks to go of this transfer window. And Mikel Arteta has talked about maximising every window. Mikel Arteta has talked about he needs, you know, more into the squad. It's quite thin. I know he had an interview after the Tottenham game where he spoke well on it. He didn't throw anyone under the bus above him. But we've heard these quotes from Mikel already. He doesn't need to say it again. You know, he said we need players. He said you need to maximise every window. And the position we're in, I hope Arsenal do bring someone in, at the very least someone, because we was all talking about potentially 2-3 players coming in a few weeks ago. Now that's looking more than unlikely, if I'm honest. But one player over the line, and the way the Mudrik deal kind of collapsed and Chelsea swooped in for it, It is what I look at it now and I say it is what it is. I didn't know much about the player anyway. The excitement built because of how, you know, how he was twerking for us, as people like to say. But I want to get you lot's thoughts on it. Jordan,
can I go first? Sorry, guys. Yeah. My question would be, how do you know that he wants to come to Arsenal?
Look at what he was doing all over socials. He had an interview with Zinchenko's wife where...
Right, yep. Yeah, right. So my theory is he didn't want to come to Arsenal. He wants to come to the Premier League. And the only team that was in for him were Arsenal. He's on 500... Wait, he's on $5,000 a week, apparently, at Shakhtar. He was looking for a Prem move. He was looking for a Premier League move. And the only team that was in for him were Arsenal. If Arsenal, Liverpool, Chelsea and City were all in for him for the past 4 months, does he twerk for Arsenal? Maybe, but maybe not.
He hasn't. He's been very open on social media. So I would assume that having signed for Chelsea, he would still be as open as he was regarding Chelsea with Arsenal. But he hasn't.
It's all business. It's all business to him.
He's got the money now. He's sorted.
He's got the bag Turkish. He's nice. He doesn't care about Arsenal. He doesn't care about Chelsea. He wanted to move to the Premier League.
I don't know, because Brentford and a few other clubs came in for him hard, actually, with £40 million bids last summer. And, you know, nothing was really said. And I think from what I read or whatever, he was quite happy to wait and all that.
The big bag.
So at first, my initial reaction was, oh, he's played us. He never really wanted Arsenal that much. And I was kind of with you on that, Jordan. And I know, especially Chelsea fans will be going, you're just bitter, you're just this or that. But I just get this feeling he didn't really want that Chelsea move. But ultimately, they put up the money. There was a massive financial offer there that was too good to turn down. And Arsenal weren't going to match it. And he thought, well, it's Chelsea or nothing. Mm. I think he did want Arsenal. I think if both offers the same, put in front. In fact, even if both agreed with Shakhtar and Chelsea offered still, like, you know, a better wage, but nothing massively significant, I think he'd have picked Arsenal. I think Chelsea just really forced the hand with both the club and the player and you know, did what they had to do. They were bullish and they got the player they wanted. Now, I'm not saying he's not happy to go to Chelsea. He's, you know, they are still a club that, for whatever we like to say and all the banter I've been having recently with Chelsea fans, they have had a very successful last 20 years. And Todd Bowley is spending the kind of money that would suggest they're probably going to continue to have a degree of success. However, I really think he wanted Arsenal. And I know I'm reading too much into pictures and all that and sort of the odd bit of footage, but I don't think he looks over the moon to be there. But again, what do I know? I mean, that might just be his demeanour. Maybe he's not the smiliest of people, I don't know. But I really think he wanted the Arsenal move. I really do.
Yeah, at the end of the day, he didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
Wow.
He didn't have a choice. Arsenal didn't make the offer. No,
you could reject Chelsea and say to Shakhtar.
He could have done, but like, the fact of the matter is, Arsenal weren't going to go to what Chelsea were doing,
and an 8-year contract as well, Lee.
That's it. You know,
I'm with you.
The end of it, you know, he's not. They're not supporters, are they? They're not. They're players. You know what I mean? It was a deal that he couldn't turn down. I'm not being horrible. It's like if you know, we'd be the same if someone comes in and says, you know what I mean? Like, we're going to offer you like this money to go here and all that. Like, money talks.
If the Big Six came to you, Lee, and said, we're making you a deal you can't refuse. We're going to put you on an 8-year deal, $10,000 a week, but you can't do Forever Arsenal. What's the choice?
Well, you know, where's the pen? You know what I mean? Like, that's
yes.
That's how it is. You know what I mean?
There, like, you go, mate.
You've got to accept that. That is football, right? You know, what really pees me off, and I think Turkey should probably agree with me, is that, like, Arsenal knew what the price was, right? And they messed around 2 weeks ago. And the reason Chelsea have come in for him is not because they really, really rate him all that. It's because they've got, you know, Perisic out, they've got Sterling out. They got three or four, all went down at the same time, and they thought, oh, we need to bring in someone. If Arsenal would have gone realistically, like, said, right, what's your offer? And they would have said this and that. Arsenal could have matched that offer, which they had on the table like 2 weeks ago, or 3 days ago. They could have put down at first and could have got the player. The other point of it is that if they said to him, right, this is how much it is. It's like when you go to a shop, right, just say, like, you're going to go and buy a Hugo Boss shirt or whatever, like an Armani shirt or whatever, like, and you go into the shop, right, and you see it's 60 quid, right, or 130 quid, right? You look at it and you think, oh, 130 quid's too much for a T-shirt. Nah, and you walk out, don't you? Right, you might come back in the next day, see if it's in the sale, but then you know, you have to move on, you know what I mean? And that's what really annoys me about Arsenal. I think they should have looked at the deal and thought, no, that's too much, we're pulling out 2 weeks ago or whatever. Waste, that's my biggest beef about it, not about the player, right? Is that we wasted like 2.5 weeks, maybe 3.5, 4, even before that, on that. And that's my beef, you know what I mean? Like, but see the price, if you don't agree with it, move on.
But I'm going to give the club some credit, which is that they were willing to pay a very significant amount for a player that had very little first team appearances and actually not a lot of... Listen, this isn't signing, you know, Pedri from Barcelona, you know, with all due respect. And I think Mudryk looks absolute class. I'll be honest, he does. But, you know, they were willing to spend a lot of money because supposedly Arteta's first choice and he was priority and all that. Okay, it didn't get done. They spent a lot of time trying to do it. They actually tried. I don't think it's like Vlahovic last January where it never felt credible. You know, all the this actually felt like they really tried. Okay, now the test is what happens in these next 2 weeks. I'm not saying anything special there. Everyone's been making that point. But it's not... It can't Edu and Arteta and whoever... get themselves together and go, we gave this a real go, but there's a pot of money there and you've called for players. So what are we going to adapt ourselves? I know it sounds very noble, this whole, we're not going to sign anyone unless they're the right player, but it's not black and white. It's not, you're either the right player or the wrong player. Maybe this player's a little older than you'd like. Maybe they want a little bit more than you'd like to give. Maybe they don't quite cover all the positions you want, but they cover two of them, maybe. Are you going to do that deal? You know, Trossard. And listen, I'm not saying, by the way, Trossard, but are you going to investigate? Well, what happened behind the scenes? Is his personality... Because as a player, he looks bloody brilliant. You know, I just wonder whether they're going to take that risk. I think they've got to.
I think you've nailed it, James. I'm finding how the club are dealing with their transfers very interesting. And I think we've all said in the last kind of X amount of podcasts that the club have earned the right this last 2 years for us to trust them as fans. Mm-hmm. However, when you look at things like the Vlahovic situation, Guimarães, now Mudryk, there's been other players as well.
Paqueta.
There's a couple others as well that we were pretty much close to signing. And then the next thing, they're at West Ham, or they're at Newcastle, or they're at Chelsea, or they're at Barcelona, or that it makes me think that the club have got a structure of what they're not prepared to go beyond. And in some ways, that's commendable because they're saying, no, we're going to live within our means. We're not going to mash up the wage structure, which is what we did with the likes of Mesut Ozil and Aubameyang and other players. Well, go on, Lee.
No, I agree with everything you're saying, but What I will say with this, and I don't know how you guys feel about this, when you're looking to buy, prepared to stump up 90 million over wherever long it is for a player that's hardly played in Ukraine, that's fine. I admire that. Like, but when someone like Declan Rice comes available or Jude Bellingham, I expect Arsenal to be in for them people now, because if they're prepared to put that out for a Mudryk, I expect them to be going for those sort of players as well now.
The wages is a big thing, I think.
Yeah, high fees, lower wages, or big wages, lower fee. That's what it's looking like for us.
Cam's made it. Did you see the point, Cam?
Yeah.
I mean, he nailed it. I didn't even think of it that way. He basically said, you know, if Arsenal go and give even 100 grand a week to Mudryk or 120, whatever it is, you know, which I think is roughly what he's on Chelsea, or probably more. You know, what does Saka, Martinelli, and Saliba's age?
That's exactly right.
It's a great point, Cam's made.
Of course, it is. And Arsenal
They can't be held to that. It's one thing saying we'll pay a little bit more in a transfer fee because we're investing in your potential, but we put you on 50 grand a week or something. That is different.
James, it's a great point, and it's not just them. You know what I mean? Like, you know, if you be honest about it, you don't think like Jesus has got in his contract, like, you know what I mean? Like, he's on 170 grand a week, say, like, if Saka goes on 200, Martinelli goes on 200, and you bring in Mudrić or someone else like that on 200, you don't think he's going to be knocking on the door, do you? And saying, like, hold on a minute. You know what I mean? And then Arsenal turn around and go, no, you sign that contract, you're sticking with it. What's that mean? He's going to become a bit unsettled. So you've got to be, it's all about managing it properly.
You're right. I think you're both right. I think Arsenal have to be quite smart about this. And as fans, we want players to come in. I've said from the get-go that I think we are short in midfield and the wide area. But also, I think the club have realised that... For me, the club are stuck in a difficult position. The club, I think, well, we're probably a year ahead of schedule. So the winning the league this year wasn't the intention. But then they're thinking, but hang on a minute, we can win this league. So do we go for it? Lee, you mentioned a really good point a couple of weeks ago when you said you would spend all of the summer's money in this window here. And I at the time agreed with you. But the more I think about it now, I'm torn because I'm a little bit like, do we mash up the longer term plan for the short term possible gain? Or do we stick to the plan? And if it means coming second this year, and then we spend 200 million in summer to win it next year, then we do that. I'm on the fence a little bit in terms of what we do. But what I do know is that, yes, we have a great opportunity to win the Premier League this season. But at what cost? If it means spending big now, but mashing up the long-term future and pissing off the other players in the squad, is it therefore worth it?
But the Premier League is the end game. Now, for top four last season...
True.
I don't think for top four you destroy or tear up long-term plans. For the Premier League, I think I don't think bringing forward a summer budget is tearing up plans, but it might be spending a little bit more than you want. It might be compromising what you do in the summer for now, but the Premier League's absolutely worth it. But the thing is, I think, again, we're talking absolutes a little bit too much. Zaha, Trossard, Pedro Neto, I'm just saying some names. Nico Williams, is it Bilbao? Okay, sorry, I can't remember.
Bilbao, yeah.
Right, these players, okay. Are Arteta and Edu looking for a player who's 98 to 100% the right player? Or would they go to the player that's 85 to kind of 95% the right player? And the reason I'm explaining that way is because I just think we can't go, he's right, he's wrong. Well, he's missing that one little thing, so he's the wrong player. You know, no, there's got to be a little bit of chance. Luis Diaz, I think, has just turned 26. That's a good age. I mean, whatever. But, you know, who knows? Maybe Arsenal don't want to sign anyone above 24. And suddenly Luis Diaz isn't the right player. You know what I mean? Like, let's try and compromise a little bit and do something these 2 weeks.
I don't think it's we should worry about because we missed out on him a lot. You know, like Diaz is a very, very... Diaz is all was signing for Spurs. We all know that, right? Liverpool come in and blew that out of the water, like, you know what I mean? It happens. That side of it I've got no problem with, like, you know what I mean? Like, Chelsea blew us out of the water, like, it's not embarrassing, that part of it, all that. What is embarrassing for me is that we spent so much time haggling. That is my problem, like.
Look what Tottenham did after. They lost Luis Diaz. They brought in Bento Kulusevski.
Yes. Yeah, and went straight in with a couple. That's a fantastic point. And that's what Arsenal got to do now.
Yeah.
I love you, Lee.
That's a brilliant point.
I completely agree with all of you, but I won't let them off. I won't let them above off the hook, because if your ceiling was always... What was the final offer? Was it 90 million euros total?
Yeah.
If your ceiling was £75 million, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Somehow.
Yeah, so if that was the ceiling and you knew of this interest from November and Cecil saw them all meeting in November during the World Cup, why didn't the first and second bids get made in December? So we knew what we had to do to get it done. Because then Chelsea wouldn't have been part of the conversation. And you know what? We lost out, like Lee said. It's not embarrassing. It's not the end of the world. It could be more embarrassing for Chelsea in years to come. We'll see how it pans out. But what is next? Does it mean now that 70 million
that
we had to spend? Because they say it affects summer plans, and I understand it affects summer plans in some way, shape, or form. But January spend falls into this financial year. It's added on top of the summer spending from last year. So in terms of FFP, it doesn't affect the summer window coming up, because that's the start of the new FFP year. So if we've got this 70 million, like we supposedly had the 70 million from Vlahovic, and I agree with you, James, I don't believe the Vlahovic stuff. I do believe the Mudryk stuff. Then what are we going to do with it next? I do expect to see someone. Maybe it's going to be a low risk move. Maybe a Zaha that you can get in on the cheap with lower wages.
Well, that's the point, Turkish. I think who we sign in this window, if we sign anybody, will tell us if the club are going for the league or planning for next year. Mm-hmm. If the club sign Rafinha on loan from Barca for to the end of the season, that says to me they're thinking that there's a chance for the title here. Yeah. They're thinking short term, get someone in now for short term to win the title. If they get someone in, if they sign someone on a big fee, that to me says they're thinking about next season. And they're thinking we might win the league this year, but if not, we're reeing up now for the following season. I think the Mudryk thing, just to kind of my final point on him would be, I think Chelsea wrapped him up when Felix got sent off last week. Mm-hmm. I think the Felix red card accelerated that deal because they're short in those areas in terms of A, injuries, and B, players on form. No, I know why you're laughing, because they've got numbers there.
They're such a hilariously shameless club. Oh, our £50 million winger, and then our other £50 million winger got injured. Oh, our £20 million loan, or £10 million before they get to me, loan fee winger is out for 3 months. Oh, quickly, £100 million on Mudryk, go.
I know.
Casado for £65 million. Stop them.
Do you think Arsenal being linked now with Declan Rice is a tactic to get Chelsea to buy him?
They
can't carry on spending like they're spending, though, Chelsea. They cannot carry on doing it. It's not sustainable, like, you know what I mean?
Rory Jennings made a fantastic point. How are you signing these players when they're saying they want to be at other clubs? And then you wonder why they don't look fully out.
And also, where's the money being made back? Because, yeah, they're going to let some players go and this and that. But Lukaku, that's going to be a massive loss. Yeah. Sterling, that's going to be a loss. So they're spending big money. But where is the big money coming back in? There's no players
making Sterling available.
Would you loan him to the summer? Raheem Sterling?
I'd get him on loan. I wouldn't buy him.
I'd have him. He's ready to go under Arteta, I think.
I wouldn't have him. I don't think Sterling's as great as Man City made him out to be. And I think we're seeing that. He was meant to be the guy coming into Chelsea this summer. He knows the league. He's banged in this league. He's won league titles. Jesus has been better than him. Mm-hmm. Full stop.
Not even a short-term loan to get over the line.
I don't think he's that player for Sterling to come in and then start ahead of Martinelli now. Straight, like, you know, or
he has to start.
Doesn't have to start either. To be honest, I'm surprised we even went from a left-sided forward because we've got Emerson. Yeah, I always thought we'd go for the right side or another striker.
So I want a midfielder.
I feel like Arteta wanted this player. He hasn't gone for an attacker like this since being at the club. He got Odegaard, he got Jesus, but to go all in on a player like this, €90 million, Arteta must have really wanted him, that profile, that man. So, you know, that's kind of why I was kind of upset about it all.
You asked about Declan Rice. I thought you were going to take that in a slightly different direction, Jordan, about sort of more so, do we think it's coming out because it might be the club's way of saying, yeah, nothing's happening in January, so let's just kind of let you know about our summer plans. And I do think that Rice stuff is absolutely legit. I do. But it was interesting because I think Gary Jacob came out with it first. Then James McNicholas Gunner blog posted it as well. And he replied to someone because there was a lot of that, oh, here we go, the Arsenal PR. And Gunner blog sort of replied, look, I don't think the club would have wanted this to come out. Like, honestly, you know, and basically said, he was basically sticking by his reporting, and rightly so. So he was sort of basically pushing back on whether this is like just a PR thing from the club to sort of prepare us for the fact that no deals would be done. But I'm still a little bit. I don't think we're going to sign anyone this window. I went from I think we'll get one or two to now I don't think we will get anyone.
I did say that a month ago. Remember, I said this month I don't think we'll sign anybody. I just don't see it. But I hope I'm wrong.
No, me too.
I hope we're all wrong because we've been pretty fortunate with injuries. I know Jesus being out for a long time hurts us, but if that transfer window closes end of this month and in February another one of our players, important players, picks up an injury, everyone's going to be looking back at this January window and saying, what was you lot doing? So I don't want to...
Do you think you can get Rice now? Do you think you can... I know everyone's saying it can't be done. West Ham absolutely won't consider a January sale, but they're in real trouble. They're probably going to make a change of manager and that comes with a financial cost. You know, they spent a lot of money on Scamacca and Paqueta last summer. Is there just a cash in now?
That fan base are seething at the moment. If they lost, it's one thing losing your star player, but to West Ham, he's more than their star player. Yeah. So if they were to lose Declan Rice, their captain as well.
Yeah. They're in a relegation battle this month. Yeah. There's just no way that they can.
Yeah, you're right.
My bad.
They need to keep him and stay up and
get starting some players, as Robbie once said.
Yeah, well, still 2 weeks to go. Still a few more Forever Arsenal shows to go from now and the end of the transfer window. So we'll see. Hopefully one of them is starting off with a new signing and we can talk about him coming in. But we'll see. It's our 10 minutes, our longest pod so far. We've got Man United at home this Sunday.
Listen, we're going to be back. We're doing another podcast, aren't we?
No, it's going to be next week now. Because this one's quite late in the week now. Well, not late in the week, but... Yeah. With super fan debates coming out, box to box,
preview,
all of them. But we'll see. I did say we'll do that, but we'll see. We'll see if we can fit it in. But yeah, last week there was a lot of content leading up to the game. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of content leading up to this game, another big one. So we'll talk and we'll try and work it out. But United, it's time for predictions. Jordan's rubbing his hands.
Is Jordan watching the game or not? That's the point for anybody there.
Is it someone's 51st birthday this Sunday?
No. I'm going to the game. Don't worry about that.
26-25, we're starting to move away now.
Go on.
No, I'm just saying, that's why we're at the top, because we know.
Shut up.
Back the Arsenal to beat Spurs. Bosh, there it is. Points on the board.
Can I just say before we get to predictions, you guys all said, all three of you, that the Spurs game, the Spurs fixture, is the one that you get kind of nervous about the most. This is the one for me. Arsenal Man United is the game that I get the most nervous about. I'm not actually nervous about this particular fixture, this game on Saturday. I think we're going to smash them. But generally,
it's Sunday, Arsenal... but we'll let you know.
Sunday,
he'll be there Sunday. Cam, where is everybody?
Where's everybody? this is the fixture that I most really want to win. I despise Chelsea, obviously a rivalry with Tottenham, but I can't stand Man United. I can't stand them, and this is the game for me. This is my Spurs, if you like. I have to win this game, and I think we will. I think people are talking up United being better than they actually are. I know they've been on this great run, but I'm sorry. If they perform like they performed on Saturday against City, against us on the weekend, we'll slap them. I've never been so confident about a game this season than I am this game here. They come into the Emirates. I thought we were unlucky to lose the game at Old Trafford a few months back. And I'm really, really confident that we can and will win this game on when is it? Sunday, massive, whenever it is.
Massive game. Yeah, Sunday 1:30, Jordan, right? Yeah.
Getting there 3 hours early, just in case.
No, hold on. The highlights go on around 3:30.
Shut up.
Just keep refreshing.
The reception is not good in the Emirates.
Hit the bell for notifications. Upload. Subscribe to Sky Sports Premier League.
Shut up.
As you can see, people, if you're watching on YouTube, if you're not and you're listening on Spotify, Apple, all of them podcast platforms, That table is meant to say 26 games played. I'm top on 26 points. Lee's in second, 25 points. We both got a point after predicting a Tottenham win. None of us got the correct score. And James and Jordan lie in joint third, joint fourth, whatever you want to call it, on 20 points, some way off. So there's a relegation joint battle last. And there's a title charge. What do you say, James?
Joint last. Can I say this reflects worse on me? I'll tell you why it reflects worse on me. I'll be really, really honest, right? Nothing to do with the numbers and the stats or anything like that. I should know what's coming because I watch the games. So I should know. I understand. doesn't know what's happening. I get that. But I'm still... it's poor from me. I'm sorry.
It's not good enough. It's not good enough.
Apologizing to the fans.
What are your thoughts? I know we're like... This is like Forever Arsenal podcast, extra time now. But what are you lot's thoughts on the game and how we should approach it? And
for me, this is bigger than the Tottenham game because it's more of a, you know, they're on form. They're the team that's, you know, we need to keep away from us. I think a win puts them out. If we beat them, it puts them out of it. It's, if they win, it puts them very, very much in it. They actually are 9 points behind, but by the time they play, they've got Crystal Palace, so they could have actually put that down. You know, all of a sudden, like we're saying, 8 points clear of Man City. You know, we want to be the same sort of for Manchester United as well. Like, you know, so I think it's a massive game. We're at home. This is a massive, massive game. Don't give them any encouragement that they can win the league and whatever. Like, you know, so this is one where you that they come to what I'll say. What I really, they come to this game in form. If you beat them when they're coming in form, that's a big statement.
Did you guys think that Man United winning on Saturday benefited us, or would you have preferred City to have won?
Benefits if we beat them.
Yeah.
If we beat them, it benefits us.
No. The game on Saturday gone. City United.
Yeah. Like I still say now, I didn't care who won. I think we was in a great position last week. If Man City won.
Either way,
you know what I mean? I was hoping it would be a draw, so both teams drop points. Mm. But as long as we win on Sunday, you know, if we win on Sunday... This has been the perfect two games for us. You know what I mean? Look, Manchester City have dropped points. Manchester United have dropped points. Tottenham have dropped points. And by the way, who are we supporting on Thursday?
Oh, yeah.
Spurs.
Yeah.
Jordan, on the Arsenal-Man City dynamic for getting United, and who I do think are clawing their way up the table, that Manchester derby, I think, went perfectly for us. Because City didn't play well at all. They had 5 shots, 1 on target. Haaland did nothing. But yet they actually did still dominate for about 25 minutes that second half. They got the goal. I think they clicked into gear. Then you got the sucker punch of, you know, a really unfair goal being, you know, given against them. Then they concede immediately after. They've lost the Manchester derby. It's another defeat on the board. I mean, you couldn't have written a better way for City to lose that game, not just because of the 3 points they've lost, but mentally, I think... That's a really irritating one for them.
The counter, though, is that if Man City had won that match, and I don't think United are in the title race. I just don't think they're in the title race. I mean, we talk next week and it could be different, but I don't. They're not in the race for me. But if City win that game at Old Trafford, then it's a straight shootout between us and City. Whereas United win that game now, others would argue it's a 3-horse race.
Yeah. But if Tottenham can get something off of City on Thursday and we can beat United, it'll be 10 to 11 point difference at the top of the table. Is it even a race anymore? But it's still early days.
I will say this about the Manchester United, and don't underestimate this. Arsenal have got to play Man City twice. Man City have got to play Arsenal twice. Manchester United have played Man City twice.
And would have played Arsenal twice. Would have played Arsenal twice by the week.
If they beat Arsenal, they'd have played them twice as well. So it's out of the equation. Mm-hmm. They're very, very much in it if we don't beat them on Sunday. Don't write them off.
I agree. I'd flip it. I think if we beat United, I think they're out of it, definitely, for sure. But I think then we start building up the buffer even more. Because even if, worst case, City beat Arsenal twice, we're still potentially a couple of points ahead of City. So that's why this game for me is huge. It is massive. Beating Spurs for me was about righting the wrong of drawing against Newcastle. We've done that now. We went away to a so-called big team and got 3 points. This now is about, can we, especially at the back of the City, whatever happens between City and Spurs, this game for me is about, can we now start building on the buffer? because we do have City twice very, very soon. I think this is the game of the season. We win this game, I start to then believe and start to believe we're the favourites.
And also, which is a big point, and people go, oh, Arsenal, you know what I mean? Oh, they can't blow it from here, like, you know what I mean? We've got Newcastle away, Manchester City away, Liverpool away. You know what I mean? Like, that's 9 points. You know what I mean? Like, now, not everybody wins at those grounds. You know what I mean? So, like, you know, listen, we need to get as many points as in front of Man City as we can, and as many as we can in Man United. And Newcastle are not out of this by a long shot, short neither, like, you know.
Last minute.
Four teams challenging for this title.
They are for me. They're out of it for me, Lee. Let me just tell you why quickly, because Newcastle, every single player is playing an 8 or a 9 out of 10. Every player. That is not sustainable. It's not.
You can say that about Arsenal.
No, but we are 3 years into our project. We're 3 years into our seasoning. They're in year one. They're all buzzing and excited, and they're overperforming. I don't think we're overperforming. I think we're probably in and around where we're meant to be, considering we're 3 years into our project. Newcastle, the minute two or three players drop to a 7 out of 10 or a 6 out of 10, you'll see results start to drop. So I'm not having Newcastle, because they're overperforming for a very long time, and I just think eventually that will dip.
Sunday will be one to definitely look out for, because Ten Hag, he's shown himself as a very competent tactical coach, and we saw that in the first game. I'm looking at Ben White to have a big one, Saliba as well on that side with Rashford, who's in the back to the form of his life again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you nullify that threat, and with Thomas Partey back in the midfield in comparison to Lokonga in the away game, I'm pretty confident about the game. I'm pretty confident. And as I'm top of the league, I go first, even though one of the comments last week said, why don't you let Jordan go first?
No.
I guess everyone
rules are rules. The
same rules are rules. Rules are rules.
James, what was you going to say?
I said no.
Oh, shit. Cool. Someone did actually say, why don't we all write it down and put it up together so there's no copying? And I said, I might bring that in next season. That's why.
That's not a bad idea.
But I like, I mean, that could be fun, because when you realize you pulled out the same score as Jordan, then it's like, oh no. Gutted. But there's something brilliant about kind of knowing what the person you're trying to chase has gone for and wanting to like change tactic a bit. So,
I agree. On that note, since you're all chasing, I'm going 3-1 Arsenal.
You love a 3-1. I mean, you really love a 3-1.
He does like a 3-1, doesn't he?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
Well, I mean, fair, you're top, so who am I to?
2-1.
Ooh, 2-1. Was that always your score, Lee, yeah?
Yeah, do you know what? I'm going to say this now. Like, you know, I thought Arsenal, I actually said, you know, like on the, we do the, you know, who knows, wins thing and all that. I actually put down 2-0 for Arsenal. But I changed it to just be a little bit cautious, you know what I mean? Because, you know, when you went 3-1, I part of me should have gone for 2-0. Part of me thinks 2-0 for this one, but 2-1. I think at home we're a little bit more vulnerable to the counter-attack.
That's my worry. I just won't be popular. I'm actually going to go 2-2.
Yeah, it worked for us last week.
Yeah, you just keep going for your draws.
Oh well, I'm anticipating a very difficult game.
Yeah, I am as well.
I'm
going 3-1 as well, and I don't think. Sorry, I actually was going to go 4-1. I was going to go 4-1, but
I think 3-1's a good score, like the usual.
I don't think it'll be a difficult game at all. If we handle our business, money on that,
I'll tell you that.
Oh, shut up! I think what's tricky though. Hang on. What's tricky though is the Palace game that they've got in midweek, because that could shape how they start against Arsenal. So if they might, for example, not think that Casemiro can play 3 games in a week, so then he might not play against Palace, but play against Arsenal, and they may, do you know what I mean? They may go for it, as opposed to thinking a point is a good result for United. So the Palace game.
Someone said Casemiro is on 4 bookings.
He is.
Might get left out of this game against Crystal Palace.
Possibly. So if they lose to Palace, then they're going to have to try and beat us at the Emirates, which means I think that plays into our hands.
Well, listen, so, if they drop points, they drop points against us, that you know what I mean, like Turkish, you know, will be smiling because 3-1 isn't much better thing. If they drop points against Palace, you know, they've
I don't think they will, by the way, but
no, I think they'll beat Palace.
I think they'll beat Palace.
And on that yellow card thing, I just remembered that Saka and Saliba unscathed. It gets reset after the United.
Yeah, reset after this game, so they're fine. They're
oh,
fine,
does
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Sick, yeah. sick. Somebody said to me that they should. They thought United should man mark Odegaard, and I said I think that would be the worst mistake you can make. Yeah. I think if they put someone to sit on Odegaard, like a Fred or whatever, I think we smash them. That the template to play against Arsenal for me was set by Newcastle. You don't man mark Odegaard. We'll pop it round you and we'll kill you. We're just too good and too fluid. So I think that how United set up in this game, I'm really intrigued. Do they come to the Emirates thinking, take a point and we'll try and catch them down the line? Or do they come to the Emirates thinking, we're going to try and win? I think they'll try and come to win. I think Ten Hag's mentality is, we're going to try and win this game. And I think that plays into our hands.
Yeah, I mean, if you man mark Odegaard, you still got Saka Martinelli to look out for, who are creators in their own right. So, you know, Odegaard is the star of the show for sure, but Saka and Martinelli are not far behind. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes, people. All of us, well, I was about to say all of us are predicting wins, but I'm going to say James has gone back to his ritual and he's gone with 2-2. Me and Jordan have gone 3-1 and Lee has gone 2-1.
One of you two is going to be bottom. Just put that out there.
Oh, no.
Listen.
Unless we lose.
No, if we lose, that's right.
Yeah,
it's just like one of
his
bottom.
Have we all got comments of the day ready? We're nearly an hour and a half.
Bloody hell, yeah.
But there were some great ones, can I just say?
300, by the way, as well. Another 300.
I'm gonna big up everyone engaging. Make sure you do leave your comments. Make sure you do hit the like button, get it up to 1,000. Jordan, what's going on? You always.
No, I've got a fight up on my photos bit. So hang on.
What happened to your volumes?
No, you know what it is. I
you
left my
wanging,
book and
my
laptop.
You're not wanging.
I went for dinner last week and I left my bag and laptop in the restaurant. I've got to go pick it up in a minute, actually. Oh. And my book is in the bag. Anyway,
incredible.
Should I go first?
How does this bloke get his life? It's incredible.
Can of poor talk sport, AFTV, and
he's he's either got a good agent or PR or somebody. Or
leave me alone. Right, I've got a couple. Let me just rattle through a few. I got a message. Luki Diaba, he messaged Fabregas to replace Turkish. I like that one. There was another one.
Oh, you like that one, yeah?
another one said here. The fact Jordan is now wanting to predict either a draw or a loss so that his curse doesn't affect the other team is even more hilarious. Very, very true. And the last one is, love the shout out to you guys, gave the fans that you've run into on the street. I actually saw Jordan in the market the other day. I turned around and walked away.
Yes.
That was one of mine
as well. That is a top comment.
Absolute wanker.
That's up there with the one that was, you know, a few months ago that said, I hope you do well in your business. So maybe.
I want to say, like, the comments this week, I've got to say this, very complimentary of James's funny takes and all that. Like, you know what I mean?
They were.
About his one off about the Cambridge and Oxford boat race, which was hilarious. Yeah. It's really nice because I'm a big, you know, like me and James don't like each other, as you know, like, but. I've always been a big fan of him from day one, and he's just growing and growing and growing and becoming much, much better. And I think the funny side of James is probably saying I see very early, and people probably didn't. And you know, so I'm so pleased that
this show.
He's like our Saka, isn't he? He's come from young but coming
flourishing
through,
in every
flourishing
way.
Flourishing now.
I do like it, and he is a funny guy, and he comes out with some very, very good comments. So well done, and I'm very pleased with that. Right,
well, thank you. That's very sweet.
Amen to that.
I've gone for I don't know what is it. Wasserman and Nima or whatever at Naza. Well, sorry, whatever the name is again. Lee does a good job of hiding his yawns, but you can always tell. Like that.
You can tell.
I love that one. So, you know,
I can tell.
I've obviously now got a, especially on the 8 o'clock early ones, I'm going to have to change my tactic, like, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
Nice. Just a heads up, people. There was a couple of people late today, and we let them off.
Yeah, we let them off. Yeah.
You see?
Yeah. No, but hang on. Wasn't we
on board to trial? Jury was out. I had to bring the judge in.
Wasn't we in within? Isn't there like a window that we're allowed to be late before it?
No,
in?
It's any time you're late after that. You know, 8 o'clock is.
And we give a 5 minute window, but you was
we
at
let
that
you off.
As
we
well.
Let
but
you
also, these are just slightly fraudulent claims because I jumped on and Turkish still spent 10 minutes with kind
yeah,
of the
yeah,
to go back
cup
and
tea,
yeah. And taking a tea.
That's because yeah. Jordan wasn't here yet.
No, so, I was here before five past. I was here before
yeah, he
five
was.
Past.
We're just about starting. You said, I was just going to go and make a cup of tea. Point deduction, I think. Point deduction.
Oh, look at you. Back to trial again, I assume.
Bring back Saroy.
For my comments, I mean, you honestly had, I had that one about the Jordan in the market walking away. I had the Lee yawn. So I've just gone with this. It's, I mean, it also, I do love it because it's so true. This pod has gone from forever Arsenal to therapy for Lee and James. And I think we went full circle there. There are a few that were, there's another one that said, Harry Potter and Voldemort have brought their beef to forever Arsenal. Yeah. And another, which wasn't, it wasn't on a funny tone, but there was a few comments from Netweed. I saw him replying to some people in the comment section, and he was very, there's not just critical, but I think beyond critical of Eddie Nketiah and us starting with him in the game and talking about how Harry Kane would, you know, outshine him, whatever. Back your players, guys. Back your, I mean, it's all well and good having an opinion or what you think might happen, but sometimes I think I'm just calling, you know, he was replying to a lot of stuff, and I really appreciate he watches the show and follows and all that, but hopefully Eddie's performance was just a little lesson to all of us that things can turn around very quickly in football.
And just before you go, Turkish, on that point, Eddie Nketiah, I think he's someone that I really am looking forward to stepping up on the weekend. We need a big game from Nketiah. I don't think we'll get bags of chances, but I need him to be the guy. I need him to prove that actually he can replace Jesus in these big games. This is a massive game, so I think Nketiah can really shut a lot of people up, including me. He did. I need another one.
Yeah, in one sense, right? The chance is missed. He needs one against United, to say the least. My comment comes from Charles Littledale. Am I the only one who is irritated by Turkish saying it is what it is?
Yeah, I saw that as well. Yeah.
You know my reply to that?
It is what it is.
It is what it is, my guy. What can we do? Listen, hit the like button. Make sure you're subscribed. Notification bell on. An hour and a half special after I've just done 3 hours on Big Six last night. I've got Big Six extra tonight as well. Overtime. I'm gonna have to speak to Robbie about pay rise.
Yeah, I think we're a bit of overtime today, especially these early morning starts as well.
I agree.
Yeah, thank you, Jordan. But yeah, you are the reason for these early morning starts. You're the one that wants to put me on trial straight away for making a cup of tea.
And by the way, the fact that we've gone all the way nearly to 10 o'clock shows that there was no reason whatsoever to start at 8.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. Well said.
Nah, Jordan, you're taking the piss. You what? Nah.
No. You know what? It's normally I have stuff to do from 9 o'clock onwards, but today it was a loose day. It was a loose day. But normally the 8 a.m.s do help still.
Cool. Big up Jordan. Big up Lee. Big up James. Make sure you're subscribed. Notification bells on. Make sure you go over to James's channel as well, Lee's channel as well, my channel. Support the individual solo channels as well. We're all doing content individually as well as the collective on AFTV. And we'll be back after the United game. There's definitely not going to be a next show this week now, considering the length of this one. So I hope you guys enjoy the long Forever Arsenal podcast. And tune in next week, where hopefully it's all smiles again. We put United to the sword. We get the 3 points and we keep it moving, people. Love for the love. We are out, people. Peace.
Sports Social Podcast Network.